When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, welcome back to ESPN Scrum Reset for another week. Christy Doran here in Sydney, Sam Bruce in the host chair, and Christy, the bye rounds are finally behind us. Our weekends of four games are done. We're back to six this weekend, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, yeah, and our weekends are quickly going to get sucked up with a lot of rugby, but I don't mind that because I'll tell you what, the banquet of what we've got in store is not bad this coming week, but you're right, four matches, there's a Super W final, so it's all ahead of us.
It is, and I mean, you and I have taken plenty of shots at Sansa over the years. Anyone who listened to that pod would understand that. But I think at least the Super Rugby organisers, so the commission, Kevin Malloy, this has been planned, I guess, kind of Rugby Australia, New Zealand Rugby, we can give them the credit for this, is having the Anzac round this weekend, five Trans-Tasman clashes between Australia and New Zealand, and they all look like they could go either way. I mean, after clearly there was a blowout win for the Blues over the Brumbies last week. The Brums are back at home against the Hurricanes. You've got the Blues travelling to Brisbane to take on a Reds side that was shut out the Highlanders. Rebels going to Christchurch for the Crusaders. Waratahs hosting the Chiefs. And that must leave the Force travelling to Dunedin for the Highlanders, I guess. So each one of those games, there's some genuine uncertainty. And in a competition where we don't always get that, that's really something this weekend.
Well, it's what you need. It's what every competition needs. And we've been crying out for it for a long, long time. I've been saying, and I know you have as well, but the Super Rugby Pacific competition has always felt like the right comp. And we finally got there because pretty much since I've been reporting rugby, which is 2014, 2015, started to come about, it was Super 15 and it moved to Super 18. And instantly we knew it wasn't right. And so for the next six years or so, it was treading through mud, and it was a bit of a grind. No one liked it. There was changes with the conference system and everything else. And we finally get to a period in time where we can appreciate it's a very easy competition to understand. It's a simple final structure to understand. All we're needed is some competition and some jeopardy. And we're finally now started to see it. And it's a couple of years in the making. And here we are. And that's why I also hope there's a bit more stability going forward with this comp, so that everyone can kind of start to appreciate it for what it is, rather than look back to what the glory years might have been a decade or two back.
Absolutely. And a decision looming on the Rebels with that voluntary administration window about to expire, I think, the end of this week. So before we look too far ahead, Christy, we're going to do something a little bit different and look at a bit of a Wallabies positional power rankings today ahead of the run home, 6 weeks to go in Super Rugby Pacific. But let's look back at round number nine beforehand. And again, I've been particularly critical of the Force, not just this year, but probably over an extended period of time. And I'm a big believer then when credit is due, you've also got to give it. And on Saturday night, look, I think if that wasn't their best ever performance, and maybe you've got to go back to the Matt Giddo, Cameron Shepherd, Matt Hodgson kind of years around the 2009-10 season there, probably, I think, the early days of James O'Connor. This has got to be certainly in the top three, because you don't use a word complete in talking about the Force ever, but probably the best way to describe that, on both sides of the ball, at set piece, it was a memorable victory for this franchise. And you only hope that they can kick on from here and really contest, make a run for the finals. Of course, the big talking point, the returns of Kurt Lebeil and Isaac Rodder. Probably couldn't have gone any better.
Not at all. And it was understated from Kurt Lebeil. He was pretty seamless in his return. And that's something that we saw in 2017 when he came back to the Wallabies after a stint at Wasps, and he instantly just looked at home and he was playing at inside centre. Then we saw a similar sort of transition, I thought, just on the weekend gone by. He's gone back to fullback, took all the high balls, was really smooth as a ball distributor, generally speaking, jumping in at probably second five behind Benny Donaldson, who was calling the shots, but just instantly gave the whole back line some poise. And that's not something that, and direction. We haven't really spoken about that with the Force in years gone by. Isaac Rodder's just, I think, even more significant, his return, just for the fact that, and I wrote yesterday, I think the second row is the biggest weakness for Australian rugby. And if you're not looking overseas, which it doesn't seem like Joe Schmidt will, he needs guys like Isaac Rodder on the park. Otherwise, the Wallabies are in for a long, long couple of years ahead of them. You know, you've got Nick Frost, a couple other guys that have emerged over the last little while. You've got Josh Canham coming too. But to have someone who has 6-7 years of rugby behind them, maybe not always playing, but Isaac Rodder, the calmness he brought, a massive line out still around the 65th minute mark when it was 25-15 to the Force and they're defending their own goal line. And I just liked all the rucks that he was hitting too. And you could just see, and maybe it was because he was tired and he was gassed and he didn't want it to be too up-tempo, but there was other occasions where he was just saying, once we've got a penalty around that 22 mark or 30 metres out, calm it down, settle it, let's think, let's go for the points. And that's experience and a level head. And we know that Isaac Rodder in the past has had leadership kind of aspirations. Well, that was an example, I think, of just some of the calmness and leadership that he brings. Awesome to see him back. It's great for Australian rugby, great for Isaac Rodder too.
Yeah, basically 2 years out with that debilitating foot injury, and great article with Brittany Mitchell at the start of our year now. Our preview coverage for the season, go back and revisit it if you haven't. Talking about Googling, can you cut your foot off, I think, words to that effect. Just a hell of a lot of time where he out of the game when he questioned whether he really, at times anyway, had the desire to go on and fight back from the injury. So amazing, a great result to see him back. Played 59 minutes, I think, in the end, which was probably a lot more than he planned on playing. But you're right, he's not a flashy lock by any stretch of the imagination. He just does the hard, tough stuff, and that's probably something that has been missing in Australia. Think back to that 2022 spring tour when those Wallabies, the attacking ruck, was just beaten out in just about every game on that tour. He's kind of made for that role, and defensively he's a workhorse, and you mentioned the line-out steals. So big ticks for him there. Look, Kirtley is certainly a lot older than Isaac. I think Isaac's 27 and Kirtley's 35. So age isn't on Kirtley's side, but I do wonder his ability to cover 10, 12, 15, whether that still shows he's got that utility value probably for this year and even for that Lions series next year. He's kind of looms when fit and when at his best as, you know, an ideal bench player, particularly if you want to go for that 6-2 split. The fact that he can cover those three positions, and with a bit of a reshuffle there, you probably pick a halfback as well, and you're pretty well served in that kind of format. But is that how you see his most likely chance of getting back into the Wallabies, knowing who's ahead of him probably in that 15 position and certainly playing very well?
Yeah, I think so. And I'd be thinking about him as a squad member, not necessarily as a starting 15 guy yet, but his ability to cover multiple positions, as you said, goal-kicking option if necessary. And it's probably just the leadership. People will probably scoff at that remark and shake their head. You speak to everyone that plays with him, they all say he's a leader. They all say that he's great to have within the camp because of the infectious energy that he brings. And when you've got a switched on Kirtley Beall, that's a really powerful sort of thing. There's not that much experience. There's not many guys are older than 30 in the back line for Australian rugby other than your Nick White. You're not going to be going to Bernard Foley. You're not going to be going to Quade Cooper. You're unlikely to go to James O'Connor. We still have yet to see him for the Reds. We probably will over the next month. But one or two guys older than 30 is a really important thing, I think, going forward for Joe Schmidt, just to be able to have some extra eyes out in the field. And we've got to remember as well that when Quade Cooper and Bernard Foley have been around, they've been picked as tens, and it's more often seen guys like Wallace here drop out of the team or drop out of the 15. And to have a guy of his experience in ball playing prowess out in the field, potentially at 12 or at 15 alongside emerging 10, I think that's a really invaluable thing for Schmidt and Australian rugby going forward.
Indeed. And I think the addition of these guys to that four squad, certainly the other night, as I mentioned, complete performance, just how much...
Michael Wells was excellent off the bench, wasn't he?
He was. Will Harris and Tozzano really starting to string games together now, Carlo Tozzano on that seven jersey. Obviously had the sin binning the other night, but is learning more, a bit like Fraser McWright, when and when not to have a crack. At the breakdown, Bailey Kunzel seems to be a real find there on the wing. He's been shuffled around that little few positions in that back line over the years. So, yeah, you just hope that they can kick on from here. And if they were to get a win in Dunedin over the Force this weekend, then that would really put them in the running for that probably 6th, 7th, 8th scramble, which, you know, say what you want about this inflated finals system, but with 8 teams, it does play into that situation rather well. It wasn't so good in Auckland, Christy, where the Brumbies were absolutely hammered, I think 45-7 by the Blues. Just a, you know, a real, not a reality check. I think it's more of a concern because this is two games now where the Brumbies have lost the physical battle up front against New Zealand teams. First, the Chiefs at Super Round. Now the Blues in Auckland, blown away, blown off the paddock on both occasions. But I know you picked up on this early on as well. The decision to take a quick tap from following the yellow card to Funaki. And I almost feel like they butchered that try there a bit. I think Satchford could have found a pass back on the inside there at one point with a wonderful break from inside their own half. Now, had they scored there, we may well be talking about a different game, potentially not a different result, but a different storyline. But that just, I couldn't fathom that decision at that point in time. It made no sense to me whatsoever. In that position, why not kick for the corner and try your line out drive or even set a scrum and try and use that extra man from the base with no halfback there defending? Or if they have dropped a player, then they're going to depower the scrum and, you know, at least put a bit of pressure on up front to go a tap and then not even really offer any subterfuge, any trickery at all. It was two passes to the right that weren't great passes, immediately on the back foot. And from memory, they turned the ball over four phases later. It made no sense to me.
Bruce, it still doesn't make sense to me. A few days later. And it was just to lead up to that, Matt Tamura yesterday made reference to the fact that it was Ollie Sapsford on that left wing. And even though Corey Toole was wearing the 11 jersey, he was often on the right wing. Now, if Corey Toole was on that left wing, he scores that try, I think. And Ollie Sapsford, he's a reasonable player. He's a guy that's not going to let you down too often. But you're right. An out-and-out winger scores that try, probably burns someone on the inside or at the very least with some footwork. But to get back to that, it's a head-scratcher. And it was clearly a plan, I think, by the Brumbies to try to catch the Blues napping at various points in time in the first half an hour, play some up-tempo. It's a big forward pack, perhaps run them around, don't allow them to go to set piece too often. But it really bit them in the backside because in the first 10 minutes, you're going to set piece every day of the week. And I know that the quick tap has come back into fashion over the last 18 months and especially in Super Rugby with the Fiji Drua, who have probably operated it and used it more than anyone else, but you rarely see it work. And here was another indication of that. You're right. They didn't fire a shot whatsoever. And although their line-out hasn't been brilliant this year, you're backing yourselves there, 5-metre line-out, try to get a playoff, a penalty advantage, and then you can play throw the ball around. But that was inexcusable, I think. And then to be really wasteful down the short side off a couple of throws, playing back on the inside to Billy Pollard. Just another couple of examples of the Brumbies not showing the accuracy that's needed when you go to opposition stadiums and opposition take on and play away from home. You've got to be clinical. They had their opportunities early and they missed them. And there was no coming back after that. They just felt, they looked so deflated by that half hour mark when Caleb Clark runs straight off the back of a scrum and highlights Noah Lolasio, Ryan Lonigan in defence and just goes straight at him. And it was pretty much over from that moment onwards, wasn't it?
It was, and I think they also were not taking the points there after that first crack of the tap. They had a couple of penalties, and the way Noah's kicking, and I just did a quick look before, it was 88.2%, probably at the outer reaches of his distance, but I think he still would have knocked those two over. Now, maybe you don't get the second penalty, but at least you've got a foothold in the game at that point. Rather than being 7-0 down, it could have been 7-6 down, and you know what, you're starting to ask a few questions of the Blues at that point and just creating a little bit of scoreboard pressure, clearly not with the lead, but at least you're in the contest. So I found that perplexing as well. It's, as I said, it's a real concern now for the Brumbies, these two results, and they'll be better at home this week, I've got no doubt, against the Hurricanes. But you really feel that that was their moment to at least show that they're capable of mixing it with New Zealand's best on home soil, because they're probably going to take now a slip up from either the Blues or the Hurricanes for them to get a top two spot at some point. Now, there's a few tough games for both those sides against fellow New Zealand franchises on the way home. But the Brumbies have got some tough ones to come as well. They will need to beat the Hurricanes this weekend, I think, to kind of stay in touch there of being a chance for the top two. But yes, as I said, not a reality check, another reminder of the distance at this point in time where they find themselves compared to those two front runners.
Was there any player that came out with their stocks still intact? Charlie Cale, I thought, was okay. I thought Rob Valentini, he had a really big breakdown still when the score might have only still been 7-0 at that point in time. I thought that's a test match play, but other than that, you know, Ryan Lonigan's stocks went massively down.
Went down, yep.
Lolasio struggled. The midfield was barely sighted after the 10-minute mark. You didn't really see, you know, the bench was never going to make an impact because they got brought on, I thought, a little bit too late. And by that point in time, it was 26-0 anyway. 33, it might have even been 33 after the try early after in the second half. Like, they missed an Alan Alalatoa, I think, just the leadership that he brings and a bit of the poise. But I'm not sure even he would have been able to help stop that rot. That was a tough night. And to me, off the back of losing to the Chiefs, really a poor loss in round two, pretty much a home game down in Melbourne and Super Round, to lose against the Blues. If I'm Joe Schmidt, I'm thinking, these Brumbies have got to pull their finger out against the Hurricanes. Otherwise, that's three strikes against them in their three most important round matches of the year. So, massive game this weekend, I think.
Big time. Yeah, hard to really be too positive about any performances out there at all. And I did like the way that Stephen Larkin picked that bench. He left some power on there to clearly get an injection in the second half. But you've got to be in the contest to start with. Otherwise, your bench is going to be as useful as Gore's doors on the old submarine. So, yes, we will move on to Brizzy Friday night. Not one of the great games of Super Rugby by any stretch of the imagination. A dogged affair. The Highlanders were abject, awful. And the Reds did what they had to do, and a fine shutout win that gets their season back on track after three straight defeats. And the standout performer here was Hunter Paisami, who I think we'd said probably last week had been fairly quiet since a promising start to the season, probably symptomatic of the Reds. Collective efforts themselves, but scored the opening try, had a hand in two of the others, and plenty of reminders that defensively he can be a hitman too. It was a timely effort from Hunter.
Oh yeah, big time. And it was only a week earlier that we were talking about Lalakai Fekete and the poise that he brings to a footy field. Having only just recently returned via the bench for the Waratahs for the first couple of weeks, but Paisami, that was his most complete performance since 2022, and he missed a lot of rugby last year. In the few games that he played for the Reds, he was severely undercooked, and it showed on the footy field. He was really poor. This year, he's been good right from the outset. He had a really dominant performance for the Reds in that trial up in, might have been Roma, perhaps, that trial. And immediately, I think he's been good. He is, even in that Moana Pacifica loss, he was one of their better players. He's a guy that's off contract. My understanding is he's more likely to stay than go, but he's a guy that you start to think, right, he's got about 20 tests under his belt. I'm thinking, can this guy give a bit more? Is he an international 12? And he showed it on the weekend that he is, because jumped into first receiver so much, more than he has in a long, long time. Passing, distributing game was first class. Lovely ball to Lawson Crichton. We saw early on he scored his try. His kicking game, there was a lovely kick around the halfway line where there was some turnover ball. It was a bit scrappy. The Reds needed to reset.
Yep.
He finds touch 10 metres out. And that was a moment which I circled around that 60-minute mark, which was just showed his ability to sum up the situation. And off the back of Tate McDermott and Fraser McWright being out, by Paisami to step up, that's a really big tick about a guy that can take responsibility, not necessarily overplay his hand, but ensure that I'm going to lead this Red side around, which was younger than a lot of the others. The loss of Jordan Bataille to injury, top performance.
Yes, big blow for Jordy. I mean, look, he's had a number of injuries now over his Super Rugby career going back to 2019. There, you feel for him because he was starting to put a few good games together again. And it looks like it's going to be a fairly lengthy stint on the sidelines once more.
Yeah, I think 3 months, which will mean that he would probably be fit and available for the Rugby Championship. Now, whether or not Joe Schmidt would pick him, it might come down to whether or not Pataille's made his future and made his bed, whether or not he stays in Aussie rugby or decides, you know what, I'm going to have a freshen up, or I'm going to move away for a little while at the very least. So 3 months doesn't mean a shoulder reconstruction, which was the fear. My understanding is 8 to 12 weeks, but we'll probably get confirmation around the middle of Tuesday when Les Kiss talks to the media up in Brisbane.
Indeed. Just quickly, did you like the Friday night Super game? I don't think it helped the Drua too much, but what an atmosphere it was, and great to see that crowd turned up for the Fijiana Drua as well for their semi-final with the Force. They were all in there for that game in the lead-up. Great experience for those two groups of women to play in front of a crowd like that, and that was a good game to watch as well. And then just hanging around for the main event, Hurricanes, another big tick for their title credentials, I think. Three yellow cards they had to work through. Drew didn't help themselves again with some of their handling. I think it was 21 turnover knock-ons in that game. Just too many push passes and key errors at timely moments. So big tick for the Hurricanes, but a big tick for, I guess, more rugby in Fiji.
The biggest of ticks for more rugby in Fiji, and we know it, don't we? It's not a surprise anymore. And I know that you tweeted out saying, what's doing? Can we get these guys in the Rugby Championship? And we talk about it every couple of months, and it's just another example of what rugby in Fiji can do for the global game, but especially at the moment, Southern Hemisphere rugby, which needs to be able to get out and show its message, because the amount of people you talk in the streets that just don't pay attention to rugby is concerning. And you know, it's from your friends that go to the pubs that don't often see it in pubs anymore, to people that will only tune in when the Wallabies are playing. I think they've got to lean into Fijian rugby. Now is the moment. And if they don't do it, rugby league games will start to go up to the islands and they'll miss the opportunity. But yeah, you're right. Hurricanes, another huge tick. I liked what I thought the Hurricanes paid a lot of respect to the Drua by having a really strong bench.
Yeah.
Xavier Nyomiya, Asafa Moore, guys like that, that they could have easily left at home ahead of a big game against the Brumbies in Canberra. They paid the Drua respect and they reaped the benefits for it. It's now a bit of pressure on Mick Byrne to try to help turn it around for the Drua to get a bit more consistency. They probably need one to two more wins, probably two wins, to sew up a finals position. And whilst we're just talking about Fiji for a second, Mick Byrne, confirmation that he's going to be the Flying Fijians head coach going forward. So a fair bit of political mongering that perhaps slowed down that process. I'm sure stories will come out in the months to come, but awesome to see Mick the Kick get an opportunity there. Off the back of being with the Drua, the pathways to lead into that Flying Fijian side, where about half the squad from last year featured at the World Cup. Nice bit of continuity between the coaching structures, I think, as well.
Yeah, and great opportunity to Mick for that game in San Diego against the All Blacks there. That'll be one to watch in the States, and just interesting to see how that concept works as well. Having said all that about the Drua and more rugby in Fiji. All right, mate, as we mentioned, we're going to look at some Wallabies positional power rankings. I think if we start, as we do down here in this country, and go 15 to 1, let's start at fullback. Now, it's got fairly neck and neck, I think, of Kelleway and Tom Wright at this point. I've probably got Kelleway edging him just because I like a little bit more calmness at the back. Jorgo number three, and then beyond that, I mean, is that where you're kind of feeling that Kirtley could slot back in that pecking order at the moment? Jock Campbell, what are you seeing him? But I guess just give us your rundown there of the top five.
To me, it comes down to who wears the 10 jersey. I'm probably picking my fly half first out of the two positions. But if I'm picking an Ololasio at 10, I'm then going with Tom Wright at fullback. But if I'm going Carter Gordon, then I'm going Andrew Kelleway to start. And so I think it's a toss of the coin at the moment. I would lean towards Kelleway starting, Tom Wright on the bench. Jorgensen, he could certainly feature. The other option is if you play one of them on the wing. And I wouldn't mind an Andrew Kelleway on the wing either. With Jordan Bataille, with an injury, with Mark Nwangeneti-Wasi going overseas, is there the potential to find a Kelleway on the right wing or the left, allowing then Tom Wright to go to fullback? That's an option as well. But I'm having Jorgensen in the squad, and I think it's not just a bonus pick. It's development. It's a understanding that this guy is going to be quality, and we've seen glimpses of it. It's not just yet the full package, but he will be in the years to come.
Yeah, a game like Georgia kind of looms that third test of that July campaign, I think, is the perfect opportunity to see Jorgo make his debut in Sydney on home deck in the afternoon sun, hopefully. Be the way to go. Factoring that in, mate, the right wing, obviously, you know, you've mentioned that Kelleway or Wright could do a job there. Nwangeneti-Wasi, be interesting to see if his name's on the team sheet here.
It will be.
In Sydney tomorrow for this massive game against the Chiefs on Friday night. And then you've got a guy, Sule Vunivalu, obviously still kicking around. Can Bailey Kunzel, could he be the smoky in this area, do a job out there on the right? I think Harry Potter probably could have been right in the mix before his injury. No Pataia, clearly. It's going to be an interesting position on the right there as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think the Kelleway option is a serious one. I'd probably lean to a Kelleway on the wing ahead of Tom Wright. I think Tom Wright's better at fullback, but I would still have Nwangeneti-Wasi in my squad. I'd still probably at this point start with him. I think he's a quality player. And if you're trying to ensure that players, when they're leaving, have positive experiences, you don't close the book on them. And in more pertinently at the moment, Wallabies need to find wins, and he's a guy that can do that. I would have at the moment, and even Jorgensen could very much train out in the right wing as well. I wouldn't be casting the net too far. I think the importance has got to be in the forwards this year rather than the backs, but I wouldn't be going to my number four and five at the moment. I don't know if I'd have Sule in my squad. I probably wouldn't. He hasn't shown enough to me. He was okay on the weekend, but I think we're rewarding mediocrity, I think, at the moment, if we're putting Sule Vunivalu out in the right wing.
And certainly, I don't know that Joe Schmidt is as big a fan of rugby league as Eddie Jones was. 13, where is Lanny Kitau's injury at? Are we expecting him back soon? Because there's not a great deal of depth behind him. We know Izzy Parisi's there, but he's headed offshore at the end of the year. You've then probably got to go to, well, beyond that, it's reasonably slim pickings there at outside centre, isn't it? Hunter Paisami could potentially feature there, but I think we both agree he's more of a 12. You just start with Len, mate. Where's he at, do you know?
I think he'll be back for the next couple of weeks. Whether or not it's this week against the Hurricanes, if he can get Rush back, he will. It was always around this time that he was slated to return. Josh Fluke, of course, he missed the match on the weekend with an AC injury. Now, that's one of those ones that players can play through pain if they're able to. He'll be, I think, in the squad. I reckon he'll be in that Wallaby squad. He looked impressive last year in the wider Wallaby squad before the TRC side was picked. The other one that I reckon will be there and thereabouts is Felipe Zangudu. Whether or not he's on the wing or outside centre, he's a guy that can definitely do the job. If he stays in Australian rugby, his future, I imagine he'll still be around for the next year. But with Izzy Parisi going offshore, I'm picking Dangunu ahead. I think he just allows, it gives you not only a guy that can score tries and hits really hard, but he's an extra breakdown and presence. And that's something that the Wallabies need a little bit more of in the outside backs.
If you're coming down then, Christy, if I put you on the spot, if it's a decision between Mark Nwanganitawasi in this squad, can only play on the wing, fullback as well, I guess, or Filippo Dangunu, who can cover essentially probably, you know, 12 even at a stretch, but more so 13 and 14, with that little bit of concern around the depth there at outside centre, who would you go?
I'm going both. I'm finding spots for both of them. But I just think that the Waratahs have not used Mark Nwanganitawasi particularly well this year. They've barely used him as an aerial threat. And remember last year, one of the few things that the Wallabies probably did reasonably well was kick towards Mark Nwanganitawasi. We saw it against France. We saw it against Georgia. And then the wheels went off a little bit as their confidence was broken and shattered. But he's a guy that still... is a quality player, and I'm finding room for Dangudu. Whether or not he starts or is in that 23, I'm not sure, but he's definitely in the squad.
12, I think the back 6 weeks of the competition are going to have a long way to go and to decide this position, aren't they? You've got probably Hunter and Lalakai Fekete, level pegging just about at this point. Great to see Fekete come back, and doesn't really look like that neck scare has influenced his game at all. Has been pretty solid on his return. But again, beyond that, I mean, the fact that Samu Karevi's been playing in Division 2 in Japan certainly can't be great for his selection chances. He was, I think we'd probably agree, poor last year when he did come back off the back of a couple of injuries that were hanging over from 2022. Must admit, I haven't watched any of him in Japan League 2, so I couldn't tell you if he's been tearing the house down or not. But given that situation, you've got to think that Joe will think local there. And then this, you know, this chatter around could Carter Gordon potentially play 12 as well. I think at the moment for me, it's probably Fekete 1, Paisami 2, and then potentially looking at a scenario there where, you know, Gordon could play 12 outside of Lolisio to offset that goalkeeping concern.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable shout. I agree with that pecking order. The other kind of options in and around the midfield mix, Hamish Stewart, another good game.
Yeah, I thought he was really solid the other night. He's got to be closing in, at least in the conversation, I think.
Yeah, I think he enters the conversation. I just don't know if he... I don't want to say he's not big enough, because you've seen other small 12s like Matt Giddo have massive success there. But
excellent defender too.
Yeah, he's a great defender. I just don't know if he brings enough on both sides of the ball, but especially in attack. He's a reasonable player, but we know that the leap from Super Rugby to international rugby is a big one. But I think he's worth having a conversation around. I think Joey Walton's had some good moments this year. His kicking game is handy. It's a shame that Isaac Henry's not around, injured. But that's been the story of his career so far. Hopefully he can sort out that. Kurtley Beale, another guy that can play 12. I wouldn't be thinking he's going to be playing as much and thought of as a starting 12 these days. But if you're thinking about other options, he's worth considering in terms of a squad as well.
At 11, look, Marika Corumbetti, I think if he's available and wants to play on, we're still yet to get it from the horse's mouth, I think. Might have had it from his wife that no Pone's a retirement announcement on behalf of Marika was incorrect. So if he's available, you think he's going to be picked. Beyond that, obviously, you know, I think Corey Toole has got to come into the conversation there, as we've been saying all year. You've got Dylan Peach as well, who'll be pushing right around that marker. You know, a lot of these guys can play on the left or the right that we mentioned on the right-hand side as well. And with the excess pullbacks there, there may only be sort of, you know, room for one or two beneath Marika with the ability to play on both sides. So I hope Corey Toole's there, but it's just not going to be a guarantee.
Well, with these three test matches, I'm not picking a single overseas player for against Wales and Georgia. I think they enter the conversation for the Rugby Championship, and that's especially after Joe Schmidt has more time with some of these guys. I think they'll win these matches regardless. They should win these matches regardless of any additions from abroad. If Jordan Bataille's not fit, which I don't think he will be, I'm having Dylan Peach wear the number 11 jersey, and I'm having Corey Toole in that mix. I love what he's brought, even though it didn't necessarily once again reflect well over the weekend for the Brumbies. He's shown so much this year, but those two guys, I like the look of them. Darby Lancaster's going to be a player for the future, but I'm having him go to the sevens for the Olympics, and I'm sticking with the Peach and Tool.
At 10, some goal-kicking numbers, mate, that I just researched before we came on. Lolasio at 88.2%. ahead of the weekend, Donaldson 70.4 and Carter Gordon 69.4. So there is an 18% difference there between Lolasio and Donaldson for a start, and slightly more to Gordon. It says a lot. We spoke about the concerns around his defence on the weekend. It may be the toughest decision rather that Joe's got to make here, and if he can offset it by picking Gordon at 12, if he wants Lolasio. Or if you can find another goal kicker somewhere else in that back line that we don't know about just yet, it's got to be keeping him up at night, I think.
Oh, isn't it? I'm having Carter Gordon as my 10 to start with. No Lolasio I would have on the bench, either he or Ben Donaldson. But if I'm having Tom Wright as an option on the bench too, then Lolasio gets it. It's hard to carry a specialist 10 on the bench. That's the only issue there, but I think Carter Gordon, when you think about a bloke who has already shown a lot, shown a fair bit of resilience, he's shown the ability to, if he stuffs up one kick, at least he's had the ability to correct that,
yeah,
and put it to the side, and that's a fair bit of mental kind of fortitude there. I just like what he's doing. I think he has the ability to get better and better. Lolasio's goal kicking though is around 90% this year, which you just can't understate the importance of that. Donaldson will be in the mix. I don't know if he's in your starting one or two tens at the moment. The guy that I'm going to say is a smoky, and if he has a big performance against the Chiefs this weekend, Will Harrison. He's kicking at 100% this year.
Do you expect him to start? We're recording this pod the day before team lists are announced. Is he a chance to start?
I don't think so. I think Tane Edmund still starts. I think Mark Nwamiwito-Arcy returns. And surprisingly, I think Dylan Peach misses out this week. That's a conversation which will ruffle some feathers, I imagine. I just think Harrison, what he can offer, if you've got a guy that's kicking above 90% for a career record, that's something that Australian rugby just simply can't afford to discount. He had some really good touches off the bench as well. He's just exploded from being number 8 on the power rankings up to that number 4 mark. I think Tom Lyon has got a fair way to go. And McLachlan Phillips, similarly, he's still got a couple of years before he really starts to enter those discussions as well.
Tom Lyon, yes. the Reds probably haven't helped either of their guys by chopping and changing throughout. But I understand what Les Kiss is trying to do there and get game time into each of them. At nine, I think Tate McDermott, before his brain explosion there in Auckland the other week, was probably sitting clear. I've got Ryan Lonergan, as you mentioned, on the slide after the weekend. I thought that performance was particularly detrimental to his hopes. So in between that, I mean, you've got Nick White, you've got Isaac Fiennes-Lewasa, Jake Gordon, usually fairly reliable, doing his thing. You would think certainly, well, absolutely there'll be two nines, probably three in a squad. It could well be a real scramble for positions two and three. I think we can agree Tate will be in there regardless. But who Joe goes to after that, again, these guys need a big 6 weeks run to the playoff.
I've got Nick White, Tate McDermott, Jake Gordon, and I agree. I think Ryan Lonergan's got a big month ahead of him. Been a bit too inconsistent this year. He's still got one of the best passes in the game, but he needed to offer a little bit more than that. So, yeah, that's why I'm going with the experience of White with the dynamism and the spark of a McDermott off the bench.
Thought Nick White's probably best game for a long while for the Force there. Well, sorry, for this year for the Force, not a long while, on Saturday night as well. Number eight, let's go to the forwards. Now, Rob Valentini spending a little bit more time at six again this year, as he has previously with interchanging with Pete Samu there for the Brumbies. Harry Wilson, again, a bit like Hunter Paisami, probably symptomatic of the Reds' performances of the last few weeks, has drifted potentially a little bit. You've got Langy Gleeson at the Waratahs, who's started, I think, just about every game, and the hands issues that we saw earlier in the year have certainly improved out of sight. Who else would be missing there? That's probably the run of it at the moment. And again, I don't think room for all three of those guys. Probably two with, and then looking at how, when we come to number six, guys who can cover both and even lock.
Yeah, and this is going to be one of the trickier ones, I think. And I've got Valentini starting, I think, at number eight at the moment. I think Harry Wilson's thereabouts. I'm having Charlie Kale on the squad. I think he will be in the squad as well.
Yep.
Whether or not he, I don't think he starts for a little while. maybe doesn't even make that 23 for a little while, but he'll be there, I reckon. And Langy Gleeson's got to find a bit more consistency in his game, first of all, I think, before he returns. And he's got to be able to show that week on week and make a damage. If you're, his ability to break the line is almost unprecedented in Australian rugby at the moment, but it's what he does next is the big thing. So, yeah, some healthy discussion and debate to come there.
And good games to watch this weekend with the Brumbies up against the Hurricanes and Waratahs against the Chiefs. A big performance against Kiwi teams will go a long way in that regard. Seven, look, I think McWright's a clear leader here. Beyond that, though, you know, you've got Charlie Gamble, you've got Carlo Tozzano, as we mentioned, no Brad Wilkin for the Rebels. Josh Kemeny at a stretch can play seven, probably more of a six. And then who am I missing? One more somewhere there. Luke Reimer as well.
Yeah, Luke Reimer. I would actually have Liam Wright. I think he's more of a seven. We saw a bit of that on the weekend as well. He got on the ball a couple of times. Yeah, McWright's the out-and-out seven. Charlie Gamble, to me, he's a seven and nothing else. I don't think he's a six. So when you're thinking about your squad and the formation of that, I think Liam Wright jumps ahead of him probably into that number two backup because he can play six, really good line-out caller as well. So I would probably think that if McWright's not there, Gamble would start at it's number seven, but otherwise maybe Liam Wright gets ahead of him in the squad.
Yeah, so versatility in the back row that, you know, can be a real bonus for some guys. And if you don't have it, then you're almost relying on a longer-term injury, aren't you, to see yourself included. Six, you've got those guys that we mentioned there, Kemeny, Hooper, Valentini potentially could play there as well. Liam Wright has been playing six most of the year for the Reds. And then, you know, at the Waratahs, you've got Jed Holloway and Lachie Swinton. Holloway been playing a lock much more this year, and Swinton's come back. I've got a feeling Lachie Swinton will be in this squad come July.
Yeah, he might even start. I think he's been outstanding the last few matches. This will be another one that's close. You know, Tom Hooper, Rob Liotta, Ned Hannigan.
Hannigan.
It's whether or not you play Hannigan in the second row or at six. Oh, I can see Swinton starting and Hannigan off the bench. It might be between him and Liotta for that bench spot. At the moment, Tom Hooper will be there, thereabouts. But maybe he also needs another year or two. And that's not to have a real knock on Tom Hooper. It's just he's going to get better and better. And once he grows into his body even more as well. But healthy discussion. But the big mover this year is definitely Lachie Swinton at six.
Yes, look for him on Friday night against the Chiefs as well. Look, I think Nick Frost is going to be there regardless. Then you've got Darcy Swain, Caden Neville, Holloway, as we mentioned. Josh Kenham coming through down at the Rebels. And if he can really put some games together, I think he could be the bolter in this squad over the back half of Super Rugby. Ryan Smith at the Reds last week, 50 caps, has got to be probably in the conversation as well. And certainly Isaac Rodder, as we mentioned earlier in the show, off the back of one game, you just want to see him stay fit and stay on the field for the rest of the year for a start. But that contingent is just nicely swollen at the moment, I think. No one probably really putting their neck above anyone else. And you wonder if Jed Holloway, I think we mentioned last week, is a guy who probably needs to start showing a little bit more around the paddock. His line-out work has been supreme. Defensive ball work has been outstanding. But it's also when you're picking locks, it's about how they complement each other as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other one that you left out there, Lucan Salakai-Loto, I could see him starting, and I could see him starting alongside a Frost. A Rodder will be there if he can stay on the field and probably get a little bit fitter. He looks perhaps a little bit heavy at the moment, but he will lose that if he manages to play for the next month or two. That's three already. I think you can find... Caden Neville was a good one that to have in the mix, but I don't know if I think it's probably the right time to move on beyond him, and maybe that Josh Canham is the sort of guy that comes through. Ned Hannigan probably plays both as a six and as a lock, and you take him, and there's your four or five locks going forward if you're not going to pick from overseas. So, yeah, I think Darcy Swain's got to just start to impose himself physically a little bit more without... putting himself in harm's way from a discipline perspective. He needs to improve his line-out work and his work around the more, especially. That was an area that they especially liked a couple of years ago. He needs to get back to start to find some of that form once again.
Tighthead, look, we know, we think Alan Alatoa back this week. I think there's a mail around that that is the case. Taniela Tupou is obviously going to be there as well. So you're probably looking at this one coming down to Zane Nongor, Sam Talakai, as the next guys could be scrambling for one position there, or if they pick an extra loose head and look for James Slipper to be able to cover there, that it might be a moot point. But I don't think that either. I've been impressed with Talakai this year. I've really liked that combination of him starting and Tupou coming off the bench. Nongor, I think, has benefited hugely from that World Cup inclusion last year, even though I don't think he probably particularly deserved it at that point. But a little bit better depth, I think, this year than we had last year. Australia had last year, rather.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It helps when you've got a couple of them playing minutes and reasonable minutes. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think even the ability to allow Zane Nongor to freshen up last weekend, where they had Sefai Garcia come off the bench, Jeffrey Tumunga and Alan Starr. That's good management, I think, from Les Kiss. I agree with you. It's obvious. Taniela and Alan Alatoa, that's the third one. That's the swinger. I would probably... I'd reward Sam Talakai at the moment. He's a hard worker, isn't he? And that's what you need. And he's such a good team man. People really respect him. Zane Nongor will get better and improve in the years to come. But you don't need to necessarily rush that development.
Hooker, look, it's open sailor, really, isn't it? Fesla did a few line-out stats for you as well, mate. The Brumby 77%. The Red 77% with Fesla obviously playing the majority there. The Brumbies 82% with Pollard obviously been in there the last few weeks following the injuries down there. Waratahs Vailano and Julian Heaven now the last few weeks, 85.1% success rate. And it's not just because I've got a nice long read with Julian coming out later this week, but I think he could be in the mix, potentially not at the start of the year, but by the end of the year, it would not surprise me if Julian Heaven is in a Wallaby squad at some point.
He's got good mobility, and the knock in the past, from my understanding, has been more around his throw out of the shoot shield, but he's improved out of sight, hasn't he? And he just looks pretty comfortable out there. The try that he scored to allow the Waratahs to get back against the Crusaders before Will Harrison's magic. I've got Matty Fowler penciled in at the moment, starting... But it is so open. We know that Dave Parecki has been out for a long time. He'll come back. It's disappointing that Mahe Vailano is going to be out for a while. I think Pollard will be there in that maybe three to, or perhaps there. He'll be in the top three to four, I think. Josh Nasser, another guy that's not getting huge minutes, but he's someone who was playing for Australia A before his injury last year. And missed a big chunk of it. I just don't want to, at the moment, with Wallace, what he offers around the park can be, and scrum can be really important. But at the moment, I'm saying to him, I'm not picking you unless you get your line out sorted. And that's the only reason why I wouldn't have him there at the moment. I want to see him there because physically he's the biggest out of the lot of them and can do something that the others can't from a scrum perspective. But you've got to be hitting your target more than 80% of the time. And the line out's been the real issue, the real Achilles heel for the Rebels for a long time.
Brandon Poyinga Ramosa probably to feature later in the year, you would think, with that contract announcement coming back to the Force. All right, mate, wrapping up. Lou said, look, the loss of Angus Bell is a brutal blow. Probably not going to see him probably until the back end of the Rugby Championship, you would think. At this point in time, James Slipper obviously picks himself for experience and what he does around the paddock at scrum time. But behind that, it's going to be really interesting to see who is in that squad as a loose head, because I think I'd have Matt Gibbon at number two there behind Slipper at this point with Bell being out. And then Alex Hodgman, is he going to play a role, obviously, with his eligibility? Availability, having previously played for the All Blacks. Blake Shopps just returned for the Brumbies as well. Interesting to see who comes in behind Slipper there.
Yeah, I think the thing that Hodgman has over the other two is probably a bit more athletic ability. He's a big
size.
Body.
Yeah,
yeah, and that to me stands out as something. If you play for the All Blacks, you're a player. And he's a good player. He missed the previous month. He got back just recently via the bench and then starts on the weekend. I think he's in your mix for sure. Shop and Gibbon, probably toss of the coin at the moment. We haven't seen a lot of Blake Shop because he's missed a fair bit of rugby over the last month. But those two guys will be there in the conversation. The other one, Harry Johnson-Irons. I wouldn't be surprised. I know he's been playing tight head for the Waratahs. I've always seen him more of a loose head. He could still probably have the ability to play both sides. I just wouldn't rule him out completely. I like the presence that he can provide at the breakdown, even though his timing's not always been as sharp as he would have liked recently. But he's a good player. There's some conversations that you can have. And the fact that there's so many open positions can be a good thing. There's probably not enough of that world-class feel to it at the moment, but there's still the hallmarks of good team.
I think this is probably the most intriguing squad announcement we've had, and that's even considering what Eddie Jones did last year, which was, you know, throw all the proverbial baby out with the bathwater. I don't know what the analogy is there, but do away with reason at points, let's call it that. Just a really intriguing situation, particularly with Joe and how he approaches the game and how he wants the team to play. Just quickly, mate, before we wrap up this week, Super Rugby Women's Final this weekend, Ballymore, Sunday afternoon, I believe. Waratahs against the Drua. Look, Waratahs, heavy, heavy favourites, but the Fijiana Drua show what they can do there against the Force on the weekend when they get on a roll. A really good season of this competition. We've spoken a lot around the potential for a merger with Alpiki. I know you're at the announcement with the Wallaroos investment. Great to see Cadbury jumping on board from them. That's some good sponsorship news for Rugby Australia, despite Super Rugby Pacific, as far as I know, still being without a sponsor this season, and that's kind of drifted completely away from media circles. But yeah, I think a game that you know, rugby fans, Sunday afternoon, flick this on and give it a watch, because the improvement in this competition and the rugby that these women are playing has been really strong this season.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. The only shame is it's at Ballymore, and I know it's the home of the Wallaroos going forward, and the Sevens programs, I think, as well at some point in time. But it's just a little bit head-scratching. Oh, I made reference to it yesterday, speaking to some Rugby Australia fish, was going, oh, wouldn't it have been great to have it? And I think even as a double-header this week with the Waratahs, and that's not trying to understate you know, the prestige around a Super W final, but there would have been several more thousand people, I think, watch that game in the flesh if it's on Friday evening, starting at 5:00, 5:30, push the Waratahs game back 15-20 minutes if necessary. You would have had a lot more people watch it. So that's, I understand you've got a book in and you don't necessarily know who's going to play the final, but we don't know who plays the Super Rugby final every year until the last, you know, the penultimate weekend of the competition. So, yeah, it's Sunday afternoon. It is going to be a very good game. It's just a slightly missed opportunity, I think. And also for the Waratahs women not to be able to have their friends and family. I know many will travel, but there would have been a lot more be able to turn up and be able to watch and applaud this marvellous Waratah side that has just been outstanding throughout the year. They're heavy favourites, but in the back of their minds will be 2022, when they were also favourites going into that final and lost against the Drua. So it'll be a good game, that's for sure. And Jo Yap will announce her Wallaroos squad next week, which follows, of course, off the back of the Super Final. She slightly laments the fact that the season is going to come to a close so quickly when it's just starting to find its feet and hit their straps recently. But there will be a heavy Waratahs influence. Some Brumbies, some players. It will be intriguing to see how many Reds players off the back of their really disappointing season.
Yeah, and the Wallaroos roll really quickly into that Pacific Four series. I think it's only a 2-week break before they confront the US, Canada, and New Zealand, 3 consecutive weeks, which is great. 2 of those games here in Australia, and I think the other one in New Zealand, or is it the return game that's in New Zealand? Check your local guides for that one. But I think 2 of those games, certainly one of those games, is a doubleheader with the Waratahs game. Get along to those if you can. All right, mate. Look, I know you've got a place to be, so I'll say thank you very much. Have a great week. I'll be off the next couple. Brittany Mitchell's stepping into the host chair. I know she'll do a fantastic job, as she did last year. Until then, mate, thanks for your time yet again.
Well, it'll be a timely return with the Super W final as well. But yeah, can't wait for that. And big weekend ahead. One of the best ones this season to date, I think. So yeah, enjoy.
Absolutely. And otherwise, all your rugby news at esbn.com.au. Give us a shout out. Social media, any topics you want covered, and we'll talk to you again in 7 days. Cheers.